there was a time when church was always seen as a necessity. It's something that you had to do. But our culture has moved so much so that church is something that if you can do it, it's nice to do. You know, it's a nice thing. And I think that it would be good because, you know, what made it a necessity was that people were enamored with that vision about what it would mean to have peace in the valley, to be with God in eternity, in heaven forever. And they didn't want to miss out on that. They wanted to make sure that they were assured of that possibility for themselves. And today we just, regrettably, we just don't worry about that as much. And so I appreciated him singing that, and that's what it reminded me of, about how at one time there were more people in the church that thought of church as a necessity. And I guess that means then that I and we here, we have to do our job to make it good for you too, don't we? We have to make sure that when you come and you give up your time, that you do have an encounter with the Lord, whether it's through music or through my speaking or whoever else speaks or whatever it is. So we have to make that commitment to you as well. Well, today's the last day that we're going to be talking about the biblical view of family. And so this one's going to sound a little different. It's going to sound a little different because we're used to talking about what it means to be biblical with our children as adults to our children. We're not used to talking about what it means, what the life application is when it comes to talking about adult children to our adult parents. We just don't normally talk about that in church. But we should. Because you can't read, particularly the Old Testament, without coming away with a very clear idea about how adult parents should be treating their adult parents and the honor that was to be accrued to them and the care that was to be given to them and things like that. And that's probably, a thing that pastors don't speak on as much and that we should, because pretty soon the baby boomer generation especially is going to be the largest demographic in our culture. And they are going to be people who are going to fill skilled nursing homes and things like that beyond capacity. I mean, that's where we're headed as a culture. And it's going to be interesting to see what we do as a culture in terms of responding to that. I suspect that you're going to see more of what I saw when I was growing up, that some elderly parents are going to be moving in more with their children, just because Ruth's aunt Katie. This may not sound very spiritual, but it's incredibly spiritual. When she was in skilled nursing, it was $7,000 a month. $7,000 a month. Do you know what kind of house you could live in for a mortgage payment of $7,000 a month? And it was pretty much a one-room place. It was nice. I mean, it was one of the nicer ones in Washington, PA. It was $7,000 a month. And so increasingly, I think that's going to become less and less affordable. And so as Christians, we have to ask ourselves the question, what will our response be to parents who can't afford something like that? How will we care for them? What will we do? So we're going to talk a little bit about that then. So in the past few weeks, I've been talking about non-adult children to their adult parents, and today it's adult children to their adult parents. You heard me say many times, when we choose to have children, all other desires and commitments must be either modified or suspended if they would compromise the well-being of our children. And that's part of the problem within our cultures. We're not doing that. I mean, in some ways, we have hyper people, helicopter parents, who do that too much. And on the other end, we have too many people who are not making the sacrifices they need to make when they choose to engage in behavior that may either produce children Or when they do have children, they still want to hang on to a former life that is not conducive to the well-being of their children in this world. It's just not. You just can't reconcile it. And so our children suffer as a result of that. And we have to get them to stop suffering. But in like manner, when we have elderly parents, we are obligated to provide and to care for them as if they were our children. We are obligated. Now, there are a lot of different dynamics there. But in any way that we should be helping, we have to make sure that we do that. And look, this isn't easy. And I'm going to get into some scripture on this in a few minutes, but it's not easy. Because some of us have adult parents who were not nice adult parents. Right? They just weren't nice. And they weren't nice to us. And they said or did some things that were hard on us. And some of them still say things. You know, one of the interesting things that I see, and some of you have shared, but do you ever notice that when people get older, they care less about what they say? They don't care as much about what people think when they say it, you know? They just let you have it, right? And sometimes, you know, sometimes that's just age. Sometimes it really is illness. And so what you have to remember in a situation like that is, who were they when you knew them? Who were they when they were healthy? Were they gracious? Were they kind? That's probably who they really were. But sometimes disease and illnesses have a way of impacting your emotional health, well-being, that you're just not kind of as nice or as merciful, as compassionate as you used to be. And you just have to remember what they were before. You can't just see them what they are now. So, because sometimes that affects how you want to care for them, because they say something to you like you didn't see it coming, right? And they may be very perceptive on a weakness of yours or a failure of yours or whatever, and they just fire that zinger in there and blow it up, and you're hurt by it. And then you're not as prone to want to help them sometimes. But you have to soldier through that. Right, Bonnie? You got to suck it up, right, Bonnie? Yeah. So all this really goes back to Ephesians 6:3 too, because when we read the old in the commandments about honoring your parents, we tend to think young children to adult parents. But it's equally applicable to adult parents, to adult parents, to their adult parents, that you have to honor. Look, I just want to tell you, when my mother had her extended illness, the prevailing thought in my mind was, how do I care for her in such a way that she needs to be cared for, which may mean that she can't do some things that she may want to do, and yet still honor her and protect her dignity. That was one of the difficult things. Like, for example, she thought after a certain period of time that she could drive. And for many, you know, elderly people, still being able to drive is huge for them, because there's a lot of independence associated with that. It's symbolic of their ability to take care of themselves, that they still feel that they're young and all that kind of thing, young enough and those kinds of things. But my mother insisted one time, this was the last time she ever drove, that she could drive home, and my brother followed her. And she experienced every inch of that highway as she went home. Both sides. And the berms. And my brother afterwards said to me, "Rich, she cannot drive anymore." And I said, "Okay." So I said, "Mom, I'm sorry, but Brian followed you home. And you were all..." I was not all over the place. Yeah, you were. And I'm just saying this because I love you. And you really just need to give up your keys, and you can't drive anymore. We'll do everything that we can to get you where you need to get, to have as much independence as you can have, but the medication and the illness is affecting your ability to see and to perceive things, and you just can't drive anymore. So I didn't just go in and yell at her, snatch the keys, and storm out the house, but I tried to talk her down, right? And she finally was able to do that. And I know that Ruth's mother in particular, and I say this lovingly, was never a good driver, but still. When she finally, she of her own volition, she gave up her driver's license. She had another aunt who insisted upon driving till the bitter end. And I kid you not, it came down to me going out to her car, lifting the hood and ripping things out of the engine. I kid you not, I had to do that because she called AAA and she had it fixed. Then I stole her keys and she called AAA and she got her keys replaced. This is what I had to do. This is a true story. I called her doctor and I said, look, you've got to tell Aunt Jane she cannot drive anymore. He said, well, you're not a family member. I can't take your advice. I said, well, I'm the husband of her niece. Well, that's not good enough. It has to be someone more immediate. I said, she was just involved in an accident the other day where she walked away from the accident, went to a relative's home, and didn't remember that she had the accident. And he said, well, you need a next of kin to talk to me. And her mom really wasn't in a place. Ruth's mom wasn't, and her mother was a sister-in-law. She wasn't really even that close. So I said, well, let me tell you this. And I gave him a brief history of her driving. And then I said, and let me tell you this. She lives about 4 blocks from where you work. He said, I'll sign the order today. True story. So when his life was on the line, it was, I couldn't have been closer kin, right? But so I'm saying to you that as adult children for your adult parents, that one of the prevailing themes that you have to employ is this gradation of sorts where you work with your parents and you empower them to do what they can do, but that you have to be ready to move in a way that you cover for what they cannot do and that they still feel as if they're being honored and respected. One of the things that my mom wanted to do when she went into a skilled nursing was she wanted to take some of her jewelry with her. Now, she didn't have, like, fine jewelry, but she had some nice things. And I said, well, Mom, why don't you take this, but let us hold on to that. Every piece of jewelry that she took got stolen. Every piece. And I can't begin to tell you how that is true as a pastor. When I visit people, I hear that as a reoccurring theme. So if it's not the residents, then it's the employees, but it gets stolen. And one of the things that you could do is you could just sit down and say, Mom, why don't you keep some of these? But Maybe we're at a stage right now where maybe you could begin to think about gifting some of what you have to a favorite niece or a daughter-in-law or things like that so that you know and they know that it's special to you and you want them to have it because you're probably not going to be able to wear all this all the time. So why don't you think about doing that? And then she feels as if she doesn't feel this loss if something happens, but she feels as if she enhanced somebody's life in that way, you know? So there are a gazillion examples like this, but I'm just trying to give you some examples because I want to say to you, this goes to who they are as a person, that nobody wants to be in those kinds of circumstances where they are dependent. And so in any way that we can still continue to help them to feel significant and meaningful, we should do that. The next passage I want to get to then is Proverbs 22:6, where it says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. If we train our children up in the way that they should go, when they get old, as we get old, because of how we've trained them up, they will be a blessing to us. Does this make sense to you? So it's not just when they become adults that they'll do all the right things. It's that when they become adults and we become older, because of how we've treated them in a godly fashion, because of how we've exemplified Christ to them in a godly fashion, because they've taken on those kinds of characteristics in their life, then there's a blessing that comes back to us. But if we mistreat our children, right? If we're mean-spirited and those kinds of things, and then we grow old, don't be surprised if our children don't treat us in a way that we would have preferred to have been treated. Don't be surprised. Because, you know, in that way, the bread comes back upon the waters, doesn't it? But in a different way than what you thought. So if you're a young parent, invest in the lives of your kids in a loving, meaningful way, and train them up in the ways of the Lord. And train them up in a way that in which they respect authority. I don't get the way in which parents allow their children to teach them disrespectfully. I'm not saying that we ought to demand absolute obedience and that they're always yes sir, no sir, and those kind of, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the children, and I'm not saying that there aren't times when kids talk back and you have to correct them on that. All that stuff happens. But you're the adult, we are the adults, they are the children. We are the ones that have to sort of guide their lives, give them wisdom. We know a little bit more than what they do. And so they're not equal partners with us in the household. And so they don't get to call us by our first name. They don't get to decide how we spend our financial resources if it's detrimental to the family. They don't get to tell us what to do and those kinds of things. They don't get to do that. They shouldn't do that. Too many parents want to be their kids' best friends. And I don't think your kids want you to be their best friend. I think most kids just want you to be their parent. And when you get older, you will be blessed because you were the parent in that way. Proverbs 127, verses 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the first of the womb, a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. And so this is a way of David saying, look, your children are your advocates. Your children are are the ones who support you. They are the ones who protect you when you need to be protected. You know, and protection is oftentimes the thing that we have to be concerned about as children of our parents. I had to do a lot of protecting. And it was hard. And I'll talk more about that. But for me, and I don't know about you, but for me, there are a few things more inspiring than when I see a family that's close, that's loving, that's supportive, where there's a mutual respect. There are a few things more inspiring to me. I remember years ago when I was traveling with my best friend, who was my best man at my wedding. His name was Dave. We had one of those things where somebody needed a car to be transported from Pittsburgh out to Colorado Springs, and they hired him, and I drove with him out to deliver the car. And then on the way, we stopped where his parents lived in a little place called Mineola, Kansas. The emphasis of the word mini. If you spit, you'd cover it up. I mean, it was a tiny little town, right? But anyway, his parents lived there, and his father was a pastor. And it was the first time that I had ever seen a family act the way that they did, where there was very clearly this deep respect for both parents on one hand, and yet this respect and caregiving I don't have all the words of how the parents treated their children. It was amazing to see. Amazing. And then we left there and we went out to Colorado Springs, where his uncle, the brother of his dad, lived, and I saw the same thing in that family. And I remarked to him about that. I said, I've never seen anything like this. This is so. And really, to a person, all of those kids grew up and were respectful, productive. It's not like they were perfect. But you could see that the healthy family that they grew up in had a profound impact upon their lives. And for me, and look, people, when you bump into a family where the children are appropriately respectful of their parents, and the parent, it makes an impact, doesn't it? When you see that, like, wow, I don't see that very often. So when we get older, if we have that kind of a relationship with our children, then when we, quote, are at the city gate, we will not be put to shame because our children are by our side and they will care for us. Now, this is the passage I really wanted to focus on, 1 Timothy 1-8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So there is an inescapable biblical, moral, and ethical obligation to provide for family members in need. Parents to their children, adults to extended families, and adult children to their adult parents. Let me just say this, and I don't want to embarrass him, but it struck me how Rich Etter and his family with his uncle, who has no one else, who lives 2 hours away?
2 hours.
2 hours away. It struck me, several things struck me about that. One was how all of the brothers came together to care for their mother, and they shared responsibilities in the care of her, and they did the same with the uncle. Now, the uncle has never been married, has no children. And in today's culture, most people would say if Rich and his brothers did nothing and he was just in a skilled nursing center, most people would say, well, what are you going to do? He has no family. It was his choice. He's up there 2 hours away. It's a long ways. You know, what are you going to do? He's on his own. But that's not how they chose to treat their uncle. And his uncle can be challenging sometimes. So it's not that his uncle's always made it easy to care for him. I mean, he wasn't cantankerous or anything like that, but he could be a challenge sometimes. So sometimes some of us have extended family members, and they need to be cared for. And so how do we do that? Because the text here is very clear that the Bible places such a premium on family. That if we don't care for our family, because you understand, if God is our Father and Christ is our brother, how do they treat us? And if we're a father and we have brothers and sisters, what is the world looking at as we treat them? Do we not exemplify Christ in our treatment of them? There are any number of you, and you know who I know who you are. There are any number of you in this church that I could use an anecdote about what I've seen you do with your family members in a very good and redemptive manner. Any number of you, I could say that. And maybe I should have given some time where we could have sort of bore testimony to that. So let me say this. It would be almost impossible to overstate the importance that respect for parents play in the Middle East. And how we care for our parents, our uncles, our grandparents, whatever, has a lot to do with how we respect them. Understand that disrespect of elderly people is a relatively new invention in the world today. That it never really happened until, say, the beginning of the 20th century. That respect for your elders was a given. It was essential. It was non-negotiable. And then somebody decided that young adults knew more than what adults do, probably because of technology. Right, Bev?
Amen.
Right? So she has a grandson who was born with a special gene who can do all kinds of technological things, right? And we all have those kids, right, that do that. I mean, they have an extra gene that helps them with technology that we don't have. And because they can navigate all that, then there's this thing where sometimes we just assume that they just know more than us. But usually they don't. Not on the big things, but a lot of themes of life, like how to handle your money or how to handle relationships. You know, the really important stuff, or how to grow in your faith. And none of that could or should be dismissed. So the dynamics providing for adult parents are very different than for non-adults, right? Because with adult children, with adult parents, we have this kind of a thing that we don't have. Like when we have children, it's pretty cut and dry. We have to care for them. We have to feed them. We have to change their diapers. We have to protect them. And when they get a little older, we have to find a school for them and those kinds of things. With adults who need care, it's entirely different. Because they still have the privileges of an adult, but they may not have the capacity of an adult. And that's different. So my mom could still drive her car because she was an adult, but she did not have the capacity to drive the car because she was an adult. So she was protected legally in that way. She had those rights. But in addition to that, with adults, you have emerging, multiple, and ongoing lasting health issues. Emerging. The older you get, the more health issues you have. Multiple. Do you know what the number one killer of elderly people was back in the 1960s?
Heart attack.
Nope.
Pneumonia.
It was pneumonia. 60. Yep, pneumonia. Most people die from pneumonia. And they die from pneumonia because they weren't moving around. They didn't get the bad air out. They got pneumonia, and it degraded their system, and they died from pneumonia. But now, because of our advancements in medicine, you get like diabetes, and then you get heart issues, and then you get stroke issues. So you get these emerging illnesses, but they multiply because you live longer. Okay? So it's more complicated. And it's ongoing. So people who got a certain kind of illness back in the 1960s, they lived for a certain period of time, and then they passed away. Today, if you get an illness, you can live for years. That killed you just 40 years ago, that killed you. You can live for years. But you live for years in an incapacitated state. And so now, that means then family members have to help longer and more than what they used to. And that's okay. That's what we should do. But I'm just saying the dynamics have changed, right? So so we have what is called the sandwich generation, where people who have, you know, children in high school and in college are caring for the children in high school and in college, maybe grade school, but they're also caring now for their elderly parents. So they're sort of bookended on both ends. And we all know the demands of what it means to have children in grade school, high school, and college. And now we may have parents who have significant demands because they are elderly and older. And we have to care for them. And if you have a two-career family, that can be a real challenge, can't it? But nonetheless, just because it's a challenge doesn't mean that as believers we don't have to navigate that in some meaningful way and that we have to do what we have to do to help. So there are oftentimes financial issues associated with our elderly parents. Some of our elderly parents are fine. They have the finances they need, but that isn't always the case, especially if there are health concerns and a lot of medication and things like that. So, what happens there? How do we help them if they need help? And not just medical issues, very simple things like my mom would get her medication mixed up. And she would take too much of one thing, not enough of the other. She'd take them all at once. Or who was there to help her? Because she would just get confused by it. She would just get confused by it all. And so somebody needed to be there to help her with that. But financial issues are oftentimes a problem. If you go into skilled nursing, for example, you have to, you know, some of you know this, you have to pay out of pocket for whatever that's, unless you have insurance, you have to pay out of pocket for that skilled nursing program. Then once that runs out, then Medicaid, Medicare kicks in, but then they tap into your resources, like your house. And so many elderly people lose their house, has to be sold, and those things are used to pay back Medicaid, Medicare for. So your life savings oftentimes is consumed by your extended health issues in that way. So this is a very practical thing. I'm just saying to you, if any of you are in that situation, you should sort that out long before those become issues. You should sort it out, figure out what you need to do. The Area Office on Aging is a very helpful thing for people like that. They were indispensable to me as I cared for my mom. Other family members. Who helps? Who helps in the care? Who's taking the initiative to say, look, we've got to do something about mom or dad. What are we going to do here? Right? And as I know, usually it falls to one or two people and that's it. And the rest of the people get a free pass in the family. But they, not only do they get a free pass, but they also feel free to criticize what it is that you're doing. So they don't want to be a help, but they do want to feel free to criticize. And so long before any of those become issues, you should sort that out with your parents. Long before. I was the executor of the estate, and I was the attorney, what is it? I was the power of attorney long before those ever became issues with my parents. And so we removed a whole bunch of potential conflict, because if there's conflict, then it affects the care of your parents, doesn't it? Because then you got kids calling up your parents, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know. And you got to do that. Disagreements regarding care. What kind of care? What kind of health care? Do they go into skilled nursing? Is it too early? Is it too late? Guarding against abuse. I had to file a PFA against my brother, because he was robbing her blind. And his children were robbing her blind. If he had lifted the window and thrown things out, it couldn't have disappeared any faster. So sometimes that happens. And not only your family members, but your neighbors. We had Ruth had an aunt where a person who wasn't even really related came to visit Aunt Katie. And she was not fully in her right mind, and he walked out of that house with thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff. I mean, so much so that one other family was ready to file charges, and I had to go and get some of that stuff back. I mean, it was unconscionable.
And then she never saw him again.
He didn't even come to the funeral or anything. So you have to protect your parents from abuse, because when they get older, they can't always be aware. Telemarketers, right? All those kinds of things. We had another relative who was given thousands and thousands of dollars away every month. Then she would say to us, I need help. I can't pay my bills. We said, well, you're probably not going to have to, you probably can't give to all these organizations that have been calling you up as much. Well, I got to be faithful to the Lord. Well, you got to be faithful to you right now, and we can't help you pay for those organizations that you want to pay for, because that's what we're doing. So we're not going to do that anymore. Let's sit down and talk about what it is that you can give. Questions regarding the estate. All of that should be sorted out long before. Long before your parents become ill or whatever, it should be sorted out. Somebody needs to take the lead, and while your parents are in their right mind and can think, you should be asking those questions to help them. Say, Mom and Dad, help me help you. Because someday these are going to be issues. Help me help you about what it is you want me to do or how it is you want us to do this. See, this is totally different than me saying to you as parents, this is how you should care for your infant children or your grade school children. But these are all huge issues, are they not? Okay, and they impact the care, the mental, emotional, physical, spiritual well-being of your parents if we don't pay attention to these kinds of things. So when we think then that we have you know, all this sort of like extra time or energy to do stuff, you have to factor these things in as well before you make commitments to all that extra time and emotional energy you think you have. Because here's the thing. If we begin to deal with it in a gradual way over time, and we begin to take and subsume more responsibilities with our parents over time, we build that into our schedule. We build that into their expectations. It becomes a habit that other people begin to see. It becomes less challengeable by anybody. But if we wait until it becomes a crisis, and then we have to swoop in and try to make all these choices and decisions and all that kind of stuff, then it becomes an issue for other people. And it becomes an issue for your parents. Where were you before? You didn't seem to be that concerned. Now you seem to be really concerned. Why? And if those of you who are older, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So begin the process now. And let me just say, if you're younger, I'm looking at my son here, spend time with your parents. Don't wait until, you know, you think that you have your family and your career and all that kind of stuff settled down, and that now I'll have time for mom and dad. Spend time with your parents in a fairly regular way. And you know what? As parents, isn't this true? When it comes to Christmas or birthdays, we don't care about any. All we want is time with our kids. It's all we want. Isn't that true? It's all we want. So I would say if you're younger, make sure that you work into your life on a regular basis time that you have with your parents so that you can be there towards the end of their life when they really do need you. That's a biblical concept of a family. That's exactly what they did in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. And it's what we should be doing for each other.